Welt im Ohr. Ein Beitrag von EPIR, dem Hochschulkooperationsprogramm der österreichischen Entwicklungszusammenarbeit, koordiniert vom ÖAD. EPIR, the Austrian Partnership Program in Higher Education and Research for Development.
Funded by the Austrian Development Corporation.
From ORF Studios.
Hosted by
Mayada Hadaya and
Momo Kunishio. Water is the driving force of all nature. Leonardo da Vinci. As this quote highlights, water is an element that shapes the environment and has a power, an innovative power, sometimes with destructive force, sometimes soft and life-giving. Water as an habitat and vital resource for humans and animals, this is the topic of today's episode. Immerse yourself, literally, with Mayada Hadaya and me, Momo Kunishio, into the world of research. This time, the world of limnology. Swim with us for an insight into water scarcity, water quality, and water as a changing environment. All from the perspective of EPIR students from the Global South, as well as from staff of the Ministry of Water and Environment of Uganda, and a study program leader from the Global South from Austria. Several large tables spread around a light-flooded room. The smell of fresh coffee beans and homemade cake fills the air. In the middle, another table, with two chairs for each of the workshop leaders, Gerold Winkler and his assistant, Emily Perle. A laptop on top of the table and a large flat screen in front of it. The screen is showing the participants, connected via an online meeting, as some of them were not able to make it in person. Two tables are occupied, where the participants are working quietly but purposefully. They are discussing the improvement and design of the EPGL University Cooperation Program.
And we locked them, the three of them, from the things. Because each of them was asking the same. And when they started discussing that, they started seeing the importance of it.
Well, this is actually what we were right now discussing with the Ugandan colleagues. So what we have now is two northern universities and one Kenyan university. For the Ugandan perspective, we were now discussing together with the Kenyans. We should do it, first of all, upside down. So two southern partners. But actually, we have many more partners who wish to contribute to such a program. So this is what we are now trying to figure out, a flexible program with the option to go to the north.
And let me tell you, I think it's just lack of that penetration. Since then, we have had...
My name is Gerold Winkler. I'm working at BOKU, at the Institute for Hydrobiology and Aquatic Ecosystem Management. And I'm in charge for this international education programs with Eastern Africa for almost 30 years now.
A lot has happened since then, and not just regarding the history of the world. There were multiple renaming of the program and unexpected changes, including, for example, threats due to the climate change. Gerold Winkler also tells us about the current challenges they are facing.
Of course, there are new challenges, so to say, in the south. So when you look at the university landscape in the south, over the last 20 years, many new universities came up. So before that, you had the big ivory towers like Makerere University in Uganda, like University of Nairobi in Kenya, Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. And nowadays you will find 50 universities. So a dramatic change. With a lot of effects indeed. So what happens right now is that there is competition for staff. There is competition for students. And there's a lot of political interference when it comes to the governmental fellowships. It's also a matter of fact that there are no fellowships anymore for postgraduate students, which affects us very much. So all the master students are basically self-funded. That has led to the effect that the number of bachelor students has exploded in the South, whereas the number of postgraduate students, it has already stagnated. Perhaps it even went down in some countries. So that has, of course, a huge impact. The other thing is that although those countries spend quite a lot of money in education, but because of the number of the universities, the money is distributed in a different way. So the example for Kenya shows that most of the public universities who got sort of semi-privatized, they are very close to bankruptcy, the large majority of those universities. And that, of course, that has some severe effects. So the personnel, the scientists, the administrational staff, technical staff, they don't receive the salary in time. They have cutdowns in the salary, delays in payments. The universities who usually have a big campus and providing accommodation, food for the students. We're talking about campi of about 10 to 15,000 students. So it's not a small thing. They don't have food. They don't have the energy to pump water and so on. So those financial implications, they are quite severe.
Challenges and challenging times do not only affect universities and research projects in countries of the global south.
On the northern side, still, I mean, the amount of funds which are provided for development cooperation, Austria is not doing bad, to be honest. So actually we're doing very well so far. We don't know what the future will bring. But when you look at the Netherlands, for example, one of our main partners, we're working together for 20 years. They have stopped all the scholarship programs about 2 years ago. And it's not foreseeable whether they will install a new fellowship program. Netherlands, one has to add, it was very famous to have a very huge fellowship program. But the new government in place, they have totally changed from one day to the other. Not that much like Trump is doing these days, but it is dramatic. So that means that also our joint degree program, because the deal is that half of the students is being sponsored by the Austrian Development Corporation and half of the student is sponsored by the Dutch Development Corporation. That system is quite fragile. We are trying to cope, so our partner institution, they can still generate some funds to finance at least some few students, but the sustainability is also here still a challenge.
Pollution is a big topic. Gerold Winkler told us a recent example of it.
And when you look, for example, at Murchison Bay, which is next to the capital city of Uganda, you have a closed cycle there. So the water intake for the water supply is within Murchison Bay. At the same time, all the polluted water goes straight from the huge city into Murchison Bay. And that's why, because of this lot of pollutants, the nitrogen, phosphorus coming from the city, the production of algae is very high. And there are, for example, there are some toxic algae growing, the cyanobacteria. And what the waterworks they have to do. They have to extend their pipeline for the water intake for kilometers and kilometers every year almost, to get raw water, which they can process to that extent that they can supply it to the people.
And on the occasion of the 50th anniversary, one question arises. What has changed?
So I'm referring to the climate change aspect, which is definitely there. So we're trying to find activities and measures how we can build up capacity to equip university graduates with the right knowledge, but most important skills, to develop solutions for those challenges. But we believe, since we're working now for 50 years, we are trying to build up capacity. We believe there is enough capacity now in Uganda, in Kenya. The issue is rather to combine the expertise, which is there in the south, and then to complement it with the northern aspects, in the sense of it's really important for the students that they open up, that they open up their minds to experience something different from what they're used to. So they may feel uncomfortable at the beginning, but at the end of the day, it's really opening up new perspectives. So for that reason, this mobility is from the south to the north, to some extent, they're quite useful. That's the feedback we get from all the alumni, and that is also what came out in the impact assessment study very much. But of course, you can achieve already some impact when the students in Uganda, for example, work hand in hand together in the field with the rubber boots, in the streams, in the wetlands, so they are crawling in the mud together, and they sit down in the evening talking to each other, exchanging ideas, and talking about politics, talking about the societal problems here and there. So that is such a tremendous additional benefit. Actually, if those people who have experienced it, they are not very much aware that it really makes a difference. Yeah, many things happened actually. So the network we have built up, it has really, first of all, not only stabilized, but it got also extended. So we have now the Ethiopian program, which used to be a truly Ethiopian joint degree program among two Ethiopian universities, one research institution. We have enlarged internationally. So now it's a truly regional South-South master program, joint degree program, including the two Ethiopian universities and the Kenyan university, Egerton University. So that was one milestone. And the other one was that we recently had an impact assessment study done by an independent evaluation team, which came out with really great results. So the impact we have achieved over the years is considerable. So we're very happy about that diagnosis.
And what is planned for the final day of the event?
And one of the sort of suggestions of this impact assessment was to include Uganda into the network. And that's actually what we are right doing in this workshop now.
I love blue because of water, and I love green because of the environment where I work in water. Those are my feature colors anyway. I love blue and green, and they are also on our logo for the Ministry of Water and Environment somehow. Maybe that's why I have an attachment for them. Even our research group for hydrobiology and water management, there is blue.
That is actually now how blue came in, because I presented this in a group forum, and you have heard of the forum.
Yes, okay.
And that time, Nani, what is his name, the guy of the forum?
While around 20 participants are working on their ideas of what a future curriculum could look like, I meet one of them. Flavia is a PhD student and works for the Ugandan Ministry of Water and Environment. We met her in the kitchen of the Schwakhöverhaus, a building at Boku, Wien, where the event took place.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Piekwaso Flavia, I'm from Uganda. I work with the Ministry of Water and Environment, specifically the Climate Change Department, as a senior climate change officer. I was under this program for Master of Science in Limnology and Wetland Ecosystems. And it was a joint master's program between the Netherlands, that's IHE, UNESCO, Delft, and it was between Austria and the Austrian Academy of Sciences. So it's quite some time. And it was really a very rich program. We used to move around Europe. We had our program in the Czech Republic, in Prague and Trabony, the way we used to do the fish and aquaculture program. And in the Netherlands, we used to have also an international trip around Europe. So it was quite a good exposure and experience for us from the south and coming to the north. So you experience a different kind of teaching and exposure to different courses and electives.
And what was like the most surprising thing about you? Told me a lot about different countries and different courses. Is there something you would say that was very surprising or unexpected?
Not exactly. Okay, maybe the approach in the teaching style. It's quite different because back home it's more of lectures, and here it's seminar-like, and it's highly interactive. The student and the professors, should I say, it's a different style. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. In general, what is your motivation for research, especially in limnology?
The main goal why I wanted to do this limnology course is we have quite a lot of challenges in the sustainable management of our water and environment resources, and I felt that gap I needed to fill part of it, although I know I can't do everything. However, with this knowledge that I've gained over the years, I could, I've learned some analytical skills along the way, like system analysis, system modeling, critical thinking, and a different approach of getting to know a problem, its cause, its effect, and how to deal with it. So it's a different ball game altogether. Mm-hmm.
That's nice. I've also learned something about system dynamics.
Yeah.
I think that's so important in every subject. Like you told me that you're like in the Ministry of Water and Environment in Uganda. Can you tell us a few words about your work there?
My work, mainly I'm on the, I do a lot of work on climate change. I'm in the working group for climate change in the climate change department. So I also, I'm also on the thematic group for capacity building in relation to climate change across and among sectors. We teach them how to plan, to have climate resilient plans and to do similarly budgeting in that same way, and also to ensure that they know how to climate proof their sectors, because we realized that water and environment are one of the most highly impacted sectors.
You mentioned some plans. So there are different types of plans that could be better or worse for the water quality, or what exactly was meant with that?
We are working with different sectors because, as you know, climate change is a cross-cutting issue and it's an emerging concern for the different sectors. And it's a relatively new concept, but it's not so new. So people need to know how to integrate these climate change concerns into their plans and budgets. And we began with those sectors which were highly impacted. For example, water, where we belong, water and environment sector, then infrastructure, then the agriculture sector, because it deals with issues of food security, and it also has synergies with water security. So we had to ensure that we bring those sectors on board. Then also issues of gender. Yeah, there are quite a number, but those are the most highly impacted sectors that we started with as a ministry and as a department.
And is there like currently something in like water ecosystems, a threat that are like underestimated?
Yes, there's a recent concern just a few weeks ago, where have you heard about Lake Victoria? It's one of the largest freshwater Great Lakes in the world, and it recently turned green, and you know it's a transboundary lake, so that is a concern. So there's a lot of human activities in its catchment area in all the surrounding countries. So I believe it's a regional concern, and those changes are driven by both human and natural factors. So I think we have to find a way in a region of how to deal with it. And it's not a one country show. So it should be, we should go beyond the borders.
You already told me that you had like experience in the Netherlands and also like in Czech Republic and in Austria. So is there something what you would say Austria can learn, or like Uganda can learn from this cooperation?
Yeah, there's a lot that we can learn. First and foremost, we are in a tropical setting, so we experience two seasons, the dry and the wet season. And then Austria is in a temperate setting, so they experience four seasons. So our ecosystems, we both have streams, rivers and lakes. And that means our streams are, those aquatic systems are experienced, they experience different, should I call them human and natural pressures? And remember also our population dynamics are different. Are we at different levels of development? So we can learn different effects of urbanization and population growth on the different human systems, like the cities. It's quite different, though, in my view.
You can still learn from it.
Yeah. And that's the reason why we are here. Yeah. Because one thing I realized, here the population is quite low. Just Kampala if you look at the statistics, the population in Kampala, the capital city of Uganda, is between 3 and 5 million, and it's still growing. And if I look at one of the reports, they were saying the growth of the population in our country could be growing at a rate of 5%. That is not small. So you can imagine the pressure on the ecosystems for survival, for food and water security. So those are growing and emerging concerns that we really need to look at as scientists for future collaborations and partnerships for our different countries in the different settings.
Mm-hmm. I have just a connecting question. We had recently on our podcast the topic of geo-information systems. Is this a topic also in your studies?
Yes, it was part of my studies, but it was an elective. It was not a core for me because I'm mainly looking at the BIGA group, and it's mainly having biogeochemistry and I'll not say fish team, but it's mainly freshwater systems and how those cycles affect.
Yeah. It. I've also read like the title of your, I think, master thesis. So mm-hmm. I know that you had like the potential of like biofilms, I think it was, biofilms in, let me see, I have it somewhere. But it's like the potential of it. And it was back in 2005, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So was this potential, like, is it there? Was it there? Is it like... Had it like the effects you were thinking back then, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was looking at the potential of using biofilms to relate it to the treatment efficiency of constructed wetlands. And I realized there was a very high correlation because the higher the biofilm community, because it's a rich community with different bacterial groups in it, so they are able to purify the water and take up the nutrients, and the water is clean.
So it had like the effect you...
Mm-hmm, yeah. And actually I realized that our National Water and Sewerage Corporation, they're using it and they're testing it, and they have some bioreactors. They also set up some big plant, and I'm certain they are applying some of the work that we are doing as students from the North-South cooperation and collaborations that we have in the two countries.
I have last two questions. One is just, what is your next career goal or path?
Oh, good question. I'd like to be a consultant, and I'd like to go back and influence the policy and practice in freshwater ecosystems, like the wetlands. And I'm happy to mention that I've had an opportunity to work on constructed wetlands for my master's thesis, which you've mentioned about, and for my PhD research, I worked on natural systems. So I have that experience of working on both systems, and the dynamics are quite something. Constructed wetland, there's some good control you can have on the systems, but for the natural ones, they're quite dynamic because they are changing in space and time, depending on the season, depending on the human activities and the natural factors that are taking place in that system.
And for your PhD, just to have like the connection, like natural water, which kind of water is it? Is it like in general or is it like a specific lake or river?
I was working in a natural urban wetland in Kampala. And I was looking at the nutrient and the greenhouse gas fluxes and how they are changing in space and time on the temporal and spatial scales. And I also did some bench scale experiments in the labs under controlled conditions just to understand when the conditions are changing in relation to aerobic and anaerobic conditions. What happens to these greenhouse gases? Does their production increase and does it decrease with if I increase any one of those and if none is there? So I want to understand how these systems change and how we can come up with informed decisions based on our research programs and projects.
Both will continue in the future. The careers and studies of Flavia as well as Gerard. But what about the IPGL program? How will it continue for the next 50 years?
The next 50 years? I hope to get there earlier. I think our target countries in Eastern Africa, that they really have strong universities and research institutes, that they really can tackle the challenges there themselves. Of course, research is a global thing. We will always collaborate, I'm quite sure for that. But, I mean, this dependency from the North, that is my wish and my dream that will end.
Mm-hmm.
The SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, are already past the half point. 5 years to go until 2030. What is your assessment for the future? What still needs to be improved?
That's a tough question. Obviously, a lot when you look at the indicators. Of course, all what is related to water quality, food. I mean, in the Eastern African context, the lakes, they're providing a lot of food in terms of fish. A lot has to be improved. I think one of the crucial issues is that the Global South is much more involved. They have a much more saying. What kind of goals have to be achieved. And then, I would say that is really paramount, because when they look at the planet we have, what we call the Global South, that is not something small. We are talking about the vast majority of this planet in terms of different indicators related to income, children dying, and so on and so on. That's why it makes a lot of sense that we give a stake and a voice to those people and giving them room to develop in those directions they want to develop. I mean, some may say, okay, that is driven by the politicians, not by the people. That is true. It's the same here.
And maybe for your field, like limnology, what should be like there for the future, the main focus being?
Well, for the East African countries, to protect the water towers. That means the mountainous areas. We are dealing with Ethiopia, we're dealing with Uganda, so the sources of the Blue and the White Nile. So you have to protect those areas which provide water to all the people living downstream. That is paramount. And that is very much related to protect forested area, to protect soil, because erosion is a big issue. And that all is in the view of these climatic changes. It doesn't only mean that it may become hotter or colder, but the problem for us water people is that the rainfall patterns change. That leads to totally different patterns in terms of flow of water. So it's not only floods and droughts, but it's also the timing, so to say, which is important. And when there is more water, of course, the first thing people would think about that is building dams. And I think it will be necessary. But our question for us, ecosystem, oriented people, is to find a solution, how to build a dam, where to build a dam, without damaging the whole functioning of the river itself and the connected wetlands. So those are the challenges we are facing. And I think this is where we can contribute. The same is true for fisheries. How can a lake managed in a way sustainably to achieve a good harvest, fish harvest, at the other side without harming the whole environment and so on and so on. And of course, it's connected very much to the water quality. So we are back again on the pollution factor and the floods, which bring in a lot of pollution and sediment, which has a severe impact on the productivity of the lake.
And is there anything we can all do? What would you like to pass on people who had never dealt with this topic before?
There are many options. I mean, it's the individual behavior, of course, the way we treat water, the way we use natural resources, the way we perceive animals and the environment per se. So to respect it, we are part of it, but it's also our mother. There is evolution, so we are coming from somewhere. And we should respect all the other organisms. And they have a certain function. We should also respect that. We need them. So saying biodiversity is important asset and it's a precondition for life, that's definitely true. And of course, there are other practical things like citizen science projects, so where anybody can contribute, may it be the number of birds, water birds to count and then to provide it into a database, or doing simple measurements on water quality. So there is a lot of initiatives in our days that everybody can get involved.
Yeah, everyone can do something because water is life. We can do so much. You can start small, even at household level. The reason I'm saying that, it's because we have issues of plastic, water and air pollution in our countries. So if we start at household level and we deal with waste separation, that is already a big step ahead to protect our aquatic systems. We will go a long way, and we reuse or we recycle some of this waste and we use it to produce other products, and we shall contribute a lot to the circular economy and development in our different households along the value chain.
Nice. Thank you so much for your time and
you're welcome.
Nice answers and insight of the project.
In this sense, we wish you all the best for the project and the next 50 years of IPGL.
Protecting fresh water is vital for everyone. How we treat this resource shapes our future. Limnology and sustainable water management provide solutions to improve water quality, to protect biodiversity, and secure the livelihoods of local communities. For 50 years, East Africa and Austria have shared a close collaboration in aquatic ecology. IPGL, the International Training Program in Limnology, is one of the oldest initiatives of the Austrian Development Cooperation. Numerous scientists from Africa, South America, Asia, and Europe are part of this success story. And also scholars from the academic program APEAR, the Austrian Partnership Program in Higher Education and Research for Development. I met two of them. Amoni Aine, an environmental scientist from Kambongo University in Kampala and a APEAR scholar currently at Boko University. His work sheds valuable insights into Uganda's freshwater ecosystems. And Gerald Kuichiriza is an evolutionary ecologist from Boko University. His research interests focus on the processes that generate and maintain aquatic biodiversity.
I think water is very important in the first place. It is life. And people these days are even saying it will be the cause of the next war, because water is getting scarce. It's scarce in terms of the quality and accessibility. In Uganda, we have very many water resources. We have plenty of water from rain. But this is a problem during the rainy season. And it is also a problem in the dry season because it is scarce. We are not storing it or reserving it for the future use or for the use in the dry season. And that's a challenge. So that's the difference between Austria and Uganda, I would say. And with the development in the developing countries, there is a lot of degradation coming up. All development is dependent on nature. When nature provides, you use. If it doesn't provide, you don't have. So if we destroy these systems, rivers, lakes, wetlands, we do not have what to use. Which is different here, because when I'm in Austria, I have water in my tank, at least on my tap, full time, and it is clean water.
But you can drink.
That's what I would say.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In my case, one thing for sure that is affecting water usage, and maybe in this term I'm talking especially with freshwater ecosystems. These are rivers, lakes, wetlands. It's that the conflicting interest between conservationists and economists. Whereas, our governments, most of them, they have policies which are aligned with economics. How can we put more cage farms? These are places where fish are being reared in the lake, that we can produce more fish. The people, they forget the perspective of the impact what these cages have on the native fish. And that's why, for example, myself, I come in. If we have a lot of fish being produced on the lake through these cages, what impact is it bringing on the native ecosystem? Secondly, we have these many industries coming on board in wetland, in the places near the wetlands, in the buffer zones, what impact do these wetlands bring on board? That's when you see the cases of flooding coming up. And that's why my friend like Amon comes in to look at the impacts of these anthropogenic activities on conservation. So in a nutshell, there are still conflicting gaps between economics and conservation of our natural water bodies. I like this current idea of citizen science. I like it when we empower the local communities, especially surrounding these water bodies. I like it when we empower and empower the policymakers to understand the pros and cons of the activities which are being done. So when we use approaches of like citizen science, when we also transfer information into different perspectives, for example, use of like podcasts which we are having now, use of social media, we impact information into different perspectives. Maybe, for example, local languages, people are able to understand the importance of science in conservation and promoting usage sustainable of water, I can say.
Yes, sure, I do believe that science is so important. Already there is a lot that has been done. Like he says, there is a gap between the science and how much it is being implemented and its impact in society. But also there is a lot of change that is happening very fast on a daily basis, on an annual basis, in all sectors. So science needs to keep up and keep updating the systems, but there needs to be a bridge between the science and the implementation.
Yes.
And of course, looking at the political will to implement this, because even the science that is there is not being implemented. So it is important. Science is important, but it needs to be put into action.
Science also has also different perspectives. To me, when these different lines come together, we're able to achieve this goal of sustainably utilizing our resources.
You know, as they say, water is life.
As part of the IPTL Network's 50th anniversary, I had the pleasure to meeting Professor Nzula Kitaka from Egerton University in Kenya, who has co-led the program from the start.
So it also comes in at the right time when we are celebrating the 50 years of IPGL.
East Africa is home to numerous lakes and abundant water resources, like Lake Victoria and Naivasha. They are all vital water sources, but face serious threats from pollution, overuse, and climate change. Their protection is urgent for people and ecosystems.
There has been a lot of threat on most of our water systems, particularly in developing countries. And we are seeking for ways on how to sustainably manage water system within Eastern Africa. And that's why we are also aligning it to the limnology and wetland management in the Eastern African region. Water is key, and also ensure that we manage it sustainably for our future generations. If there is ever going to be a third world war, it will be because of water. Because I think it's a resource, like most of the people believe it's a definite resource, but it's a resource which must be maintained. And therefore, I believe even the politicians have realized that whatever decisions they are making, whatever initiative and strategies they are making, they have to think about how to sustain and maintain and protect water resources.
Scientists emphasize the importance of water as a vital but limited resource and call for continued political commitment to its protection and sustainable management, a message that is increasingly echoed by NGOs and politicians who recognize that safeguarding water systems is essential, not only for sustainability, but also for peace.
We want to say goodbye and farewell for today's episode. Thanks again to Gerold Winkler and the delegation of students from Uganda and all the other project partner, especially for letting us attend the event and for sharing your insights and knowledge. And last but not least, the biggest thank you goes to our listeners for listening and diving with us into the world of limnology. We are looking forward for you turning in again next time for the next new world of science. Bis dahin, tschüss, baba und auf Wiederhören.
Welt im Ohr. Ein Beitrag von EPIR, dem Hochschulkooperationsprogramm der österreichischen Entwicklungszusammenarbeit, koordiniert vom ÖAD.